that is given by Katrina Wilkie on using the EM38 and visible near-infrared spectroscopy to map soil series across a landscape.
Okay, first of all, I want to say thank you to the previous speakers for doing a good job of the background information. It makes my talk a little easier. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Drs. Christine Morgan, Tom Hallmark, and Yufeng Gui, for all their help with this. So I'll be talking about using the visible near-infrared diffuse reflectance spectroscopy, which y'all just heard about, and the EM38 to map soil series across the landscape. So just to jump right into it, VIS-NIR spectroscopy has been proven effective in predicting many soil properties on air-dried ground soils. Some of these properties include CEC, total clay, fine clay, pH, carbon, the mineralogy, and also coal, the coefficient of linear extensibility. A few of the properties we're interested in are total clay, organic carbon, and inorganic carbon. Total clay has been predicted with an RMSD of 62 and 54. Organic carbon with an RMSD of 4.6 and 7.9, and inorganic carbon with an RMSD of 7.3 and 5.6. So the next step is to test VIS-NIR in situ. So some research has been done using VIS-NIR on intact cores. These cores were removed from the field and then scanned in the lab. As you can see by the results, total clay predictions for air-dried ground and intact cores are similar. The carbon, however, did get a little worse results as you move from the air-dried ground to the intact cores. So again, the next step was using VIS-NIR actually in the field. We moved from air-dried ground to intact cores and now out in the field. There's been two methods so far in the research. Chrissy et al. Has used the on-the-go spectrophotometer, and this is like a shank that drags about 6 inches in the ground and scans the soil. They got an RMSD of 5.2 for organic carbon. Then Russell et al. Used an open soil pit. So they dug a big pit and they used a contact probe along the edge of the pit. They got an RMSD for clay at 79. So not everybody wants to go out and dig a big soil pit to use to scan their cores, to scan the soils. And the on-the-go spectrophotometer only gets your one depth at 6 centimeters. So the interest is turning to a penetrometer. This is an example of VARIS penetrometer. It penetrates into the ground and continuously scans along the soil profile. This is an example of, right here is the picture of where the window is for the VIS-NIR to scan along the soil profile. One of the things that you have to deal with a penetrometer is the large amount of data that you get. For every scan, where we scan at every 3 centimeters, for every scan you get 216 absorbance features. So that's a big amount of data that you have to deal with. So this leads us to our objectives. Our overall goal was to map soil series with a VIS-NIR penetrometer. One of the first questions we wanted to answer is there a benefit for targeting uniform soil moisture? There's been some talk that if you bring the soil to a uniform soil moisture, you get better predictions. Also, we wanted to explore the benefits and limitations for analysis strategies. There's a couple different ways that you can analyze the data. Neither one is better than the other. It's just for different uses for what you may need from these the soils. So the first way you can quantitatively predict the soil properties using clay percent or finding the depth to the B horizon. Or you can categorically classify soil horizons and soil series, for example, using Fisher's linear discriminant analysis. So first thing we did, we selected two fields. These both had soil series complexes. We wanted to see if we could delineate between the different series. We scanned with, we collected elevation data and the electrical conductivity data with the EM38, and then we selected 4 sampling sites in each of the 4 EC zones that we delineated. So we had a total of 16 sampling sites represented by the black dots for both fields. In both of these fields, we had 3 soil series, Burleson, Davila, and Wilson. Burleson is a vertisol soil that has clay throughout the entire soil profile. Davila and Wilson are both alpha sols, with a Davila having a deeper BT horizon and a Wilson having a shallower BT horizon. So next, we took the cores that we collected into the laboratory. We cut them in half to scan one side of the surface. We separated them into two columns, and we scanned along at every 3 centimeters on both columns. First, we scanned them at what we call field moisture condition, which was what the cores were in when we took them out of the field. Then the next step, we did the uniform soil moisture. We wet them down to uniform moisture. We wrapped them in saran wrap, let them set overnight for about 24 hours, and we scanned them again on the same exact method. So our next step was to analyze the spectral data. So depending on who will be using this data and what the data is needed for, we can analyze them in a couple different ways. So we quantitatively predicted the soil properties, mainly just the clay along the soil profile, so we could see the depth to the B horizon. We used partial least squares regression, which we spoke about before, on the first derivative. And we used the pipette method to calibrate our clay percentage. At every horizon, we would have several scans, but we would only use the one clay percentage that we had for that horizon. So there could be 7, 9 scans, and each one of those scans would have the same clay percentage. Our next step was categorically predicting the soil horizons and soil series. As I said before, we used the Fisher's linear discriminant analysis with that. And for the categorizing, we did not separate by whole cores. Instead of holding out whole cores, we actually just looked at each individual spectral. When we run this again on some more fields, we would like to hold out each core independently to keep those together. So our first question, is there a benefit for targeting uniform moisture? You can see on these graphs, the first one is the field moisture. That's what it is when we took it out of field. Second graph is our uniform moisture after I wet it down. The graphs are of measured total clay along the x-axis and are predicted along the y. And as you can see, the field moisture slightly outpredicted the uniform moisture. Also, if you make note, you see these straight lines, that's actually one horizon. As I said before, for each spectral scan along the horizon, we calibrated with the same clay percentage. So the spectral data is actually picking up on this slight increase in clay along those horizons. So just to look at that closer, we averaged the predicted clay value for each horizon, and it actually made the graph look a little bit better. So these are graphs of our clay percentage as it goes along the depth of our cores. I picked out 3 soil series, one for to represent each of those series. Now, as you can see, the Burleson, the purple is our predicted values, and there's the green crosses right there. Those are measured for each of the horizons in the lab. So you can see the spectral predictions give you this continuous prediction along the core. The Burleson, as you can see, had about the same clay percentage or similar clay percentage all along the soil profile, which we would expect. And then the Davila, you can see the deeper BT horizon right here, and the Wilson has a shallower BT. You can also make note there's a decrease in the clay, which we're thinking may be an E horizon that's about to form that we weren't able to pick up with our eye because we just described it, you know, in the lab. So the spectral data is actually maybe picking up on this slight decrease of an E horizon about to form. The next thing we did just to get a visualization of the data was to look at the principal components. This is the cluster results of the first principal components using the first derivatives of the reflectance for just the field moisture. So as you can tell, the black is the A horizon, the red is the AB horizon, B is the green is the B horizon, and the blue is the BC horizon. We were really liberal in our transition horizons because we didn't want to leave a horizon out in our analysis. So the ones that you can see that really are clustering together and separate from the others are the A horizon and that B horizon. So there's something that the spectral data is picking up that's different between these two. And again, this is a result of the series clustered together. It's the same, the first 3 principal components using the first derivatives for the field moisture. And the red represents our Wilson series. The black is the Davila and the green is the Burleson. As you can see, they're kind of clustering separate from each other. The red over here is the Wilson. But something to make note is you see the Davila and Burleson kind of is clustering together. So maybe the spectral data is picking up on something similar between these two series. It's also important to make note that we had 15 cores that were described as Wilson, 14 as Davila, and only 4 as Burleson. So there weren't quite as many Burlesons. So this is the result of the Fisher's linear discriminant analysis, the categorical classification of our soil horizons and soil series. If you look at the yellow boxes, this would be an exact agreement between what the Fisher's LDA classification and then our NRCS classification of the horizons were. We got a kappa coefficient of 0.73. A kappa coefficient is basically an R-squared for categorical data, with 81% of the horizons having an exact match. Again, you can see the AB horizons, none of them had an exact match, and I think that's because the spectral data was able to put it in the horizon that it should have been in, that our eye couldn't see. But the B horizon, as you can see, 326 were classified out of 346. So we have the same results for our series. Here's the Fisher's LDA classification and the NRCS classification. We had a kappa coefficient of 0.67 with 73% having an exact match. And as you can see here, the Burleson, we only had 10 that matched up as an exact match, but they're throwing that Burleson into a Wilson. So if you looked at the principal components, you saw that they kind of clustered together. So something's picking up similar between them. And also to make note, if we had kept the entire core together instead of looking at the individual spectral scans, we would think that our kappa coefficient would get better for the soil series because it would look at the dominant series along the core instead of just throwing each spectral into its own series. So that brings me to my conclusions. The uniform moisture predictions show no improvement over the field moisture predictions. Also, the VIS-NIR can be used to plot the total clay with soil depth, so it shows the increase in the clay and also can show the depth to the B horizon. We hope that this could be useful for the NRCS if they're making first-time maps of the soil series or trying to refine maps already out there. Also, VIS-NIR can classify the soil horizons in series. They can classify the horizons 81% of the time, can classify the series 73% of the time. So some future work, we are going to try to standardize the soil sampling methods with the spectral scans. So maybe have more lab measured clay percentage measurements to match up with individual spectral scans instead of using the same clay percentage for the entire horizon. And then I have a third field and 25 pedons that we would like to add to the data and try it all over again. And I would like to acknowledge Texas Soil Survey, the USDA NRCS Texas Soil Survey, and Texas AgriLife for funding, and the Hydropodology Research Group for all their field and laboratory assistance, and then Victor Weiser, Robert Zoch, and Louis Burchard for allowing us to use their land.
Thank you.